prayer guitar going on right there. Don't forget the Diamondback tickets. All right. We're here. Rosie on the house. Thank you for tuning in. We're visiting with Mr. Chauncey Meyer, the Rosie Certified Architect from Tucson, who's come up and joined us for an all-day seminar yesterday. We're at the Francisco Grande Resort in Casa Grande, and we were just talking about how he and I are both admiring the actual physical structure, the bones of this particular building. But we need to get back a little bit on topic, which our topic this hour is risky remodeling, and we've got a couple calls. People want to talk to us about always getting hot water out of their cold tap. And then we've got a caller building a custom home in Green Valley. You know, why don't we address this one real quick before we go to risky remodeling? Building a home in Green Valley, and there are several different ways we can create the floor for that house, right?
Yes, absolutely, yeah.
We could post and beam it and give them a little crawl space and frame it. We could do a conventional footing and stem. We could do a pre-stressed slab on grade or monolithic. Now, if he comes to you, Chauncey, what are you going to ask him to think through what best way to create the floor for that house in Green Valley?
Well, the first consideration you're going to have to look at is what the soil conditions are in that area. If you don't go get a soils engineering report, you probably can you may call somebody in that area, a builder or so forth, in that area to see if there are any soil conditions that cause upheaval. If there's a lot of movement in the soil, then either the post-tension or reinforced slab is the best way to go. If you don't have soil conditions, depending on the size and complexity of the house, if it's a simple house, a monopore can work really well for you. If you have good soils conditions, you can do footings and stems and then a floating interior slab.
I heard something I had never heard, and I heard it recently. I want to know, do you have any experience with this same story? I never knew where post-tension came from, and it was told to me by someone I think is in the know that when huge developers come in and recreate the landscape for a master plan community, that post-tension slabs were the way that they were able to regrade the terrain without having to do an over-excavation and recompaction verification for every one of their building slabs. So it was a way to move around all this dirt, never really adequately compact it like we would have to for a conventional foundation, and then just put a post-tension folding floor up on top of the loose soil and hope for the best.
Well, depend.
There may be
some truth to that. Depending on the civil engineering requirements, when they did all the civil engineering and all that to get those pads put in place, there's usually a specifications to compact those pads at a certain compaction rate. That is usually 95%.
Yeah, you got to drill proctors and test it and lift it in measured lifts that are moist roll compacted. And
now I don't know if that, I would think that's the procedure it should be, but if you have a post tension or pre-engineered slab that has rebar and it's all engineered to support the building, the way the post tension slab works and the weight is put on the outside of the building, the whole slab is designed to carry all those loads from the exterior walls,
right,
into the, and then the force is driven into the interior part of the slab. That's why you don't do remodeling to a post tension slab.
You don't saw cut no post tension slab, baby.
Because if you're near one of those things, people have died from those
cables
being released.
Yeah.
I don't know how 40,000-50,000 pounds. I don't know why. I don't know how many pounds it is, but it's just amazing.
It's more than you can put on with a torque wrench. Let's talk about risky remodels, and we've got just about 2 minutes. And if you wanted to address the Rosie on the House listeners with all your experience of building and remodeling down in Tucson, what are the risky remodels they should avoid?
All the points that Tom brought in they're absolutely valid, and people should look at those. My experience is people, when I come aboard with them, they need to understand it's going to take some to do a great remodeling. It's going to take some time. You can't just do it in a couple of weeks. You got to take several months in planning. is the most important thing, and taking your time to hire a high-quality, good contractor will make completely difference in the struggle that you go through the whole process.
Put your team together early so that you can kind of constantly be value engineering the designs and the room finish schedules and the material selection, so you can kind of keep the budget into an area of reality. I'm a big believer in putting the team, interview as many as you want, but make your selection and get the team put together early.
Sooner you can get, I like, if possible, to get the contractor involved during preliminary design phase.
Yeah.
For budgeting and everything else. It is the best vehicle.
Mr. Chauncey Meyer, architect for how long down in Tucson?
I've been in practice 33 years.
In Tucson. Well, you've seen some incredible growth down in Tucson, and we are going to want to be able to get up to that chapel at Summerhaven before they skin it.
We're looking a couple 3 weeks.
Okay. All right. Well, I'll be
road trip.
I'll be in touch. It's a road trip for sure. Folks, it's Rosie on the House. We're broadcasting live this morning from Francisco Grande Resort. We've got homeowners here in the audience live with us this morning. We're going to have one come up and join us here right after the break and share some questions they have about a project they're trying to tackle around their house, home, and castle.